Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege to do this with you in the room, believe me. I have been a Christ follower all of my life. I came to Christ when I was 4 years old. I remember the day. Was raised in a home where the Bible was held very high. In fact, I memorized the book of Titus when I was in high school as a gift to my father, who was a great memorizer of Scripture. I know of no person, he was a farmer, that knew the Bible as well as my dad. So I have a wonderful heritage. That doesn't mean that everything was correctly presented. It was a rather strict, conservative, even legalistic kind of church. And so through life, I've had to learn to retain the good and discard what wasn't presented well. And that's a long process, especially when you have to undo some of your thinking. But I never will regret the memorization that we did as a family. And we would memorize chapters as a family and books of the Bible as a family. Always active in the church, but basically in music. That was my niche. And about 10 years into our marriage, we were in the Chicago area. This is in the 1970s, right on the heels of the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s. And because we had started a new church and we were meeting in a shopping mall, we attracted people that would never go into a traditional church building. So we attracted the hurting people, victims of the culture. Vietnam was happening at that time. Damaged guys coming home from Vietnam, damaged psychologically. The drug culture had just begun. A lot of people don't realize that before the 60s, we really didn't have a drug culture in our country. So we were dealing with that. Eastern mysticism crept in, and people were experimenting with that. They were experimenting with sex, and existentialism reigned. People were trying to bring meaning into their life. Have an experience, have a happening, have a trip. And I know there were bumper stickers that even said, "Trip out with Jesus." That was another trip for some people. So a lot of these people entered our church. And for the first time, since we were both raised in evangelical, Bible-teaching, gospel-preaching churches, we were surrounded by people that had no Christianese. They didn't know how to think Christianly. They were first-generation Christians, if they were even in the kingdom. And it seemed like our lives became filled with abnormal people. And because we had no church building, a lot of them were in our home. And our home became Grand Central Station, and they shared meals with us, and we just had a lot of dynamics happen right in our own living room, in our dining room, and in the kitchen. And one day, and I was probably about 29 years old, and a woman who was a little bit younger was standing in the kitchen watching me prepare a meal. And she said to me, "Could I just sort of follow you around?" She says, I didn't have a Christian mom. I don't know what it means to be a Christian woman. And I thought, wow, I'm young. I'm not that older, godly woman in Titus. And then I realized, yes, I am. I truly am. And as far as experience with the Lord is concerned, she regarded me as that older woman. And now my responsibility became to teach her life on life. That's really what she was asking for. And I knew I was facing discipleship for the first time in my life. Even though we had been raised in those kinds of churches, no woman had ever come up to me and said, could I spend some time with you? So I had never been discipled. I didn't know what it looked like. But I knew that these people needed intensive care. We couldn't just hand them a Bible and say, we've got a really good Bible study, show up at such and such a time and you'll do fine. They needed more than that. They needed what this woman asked of me. So I thought, what do I do? How do I figure this out? So I went to the Christian bookstore, looked at materials, none of which were satisfactory to me. We were living in the Chicago area, loads of wonderful churches. And I called their offices and said, what are you using in your discipleship programs? And I basically got the same answer. Well, we don't really have a discipleship program, but we've got this and this and this. So I made it up. And the need was so great that limiting myself to just a few women was extremely difficult. But I knew enough that I knew I couldn't start big. I could have started with 15 or 20, but I started with 4 or 5 that I thought had the capability and maturity of grasping what discipleship was and then maybe reproducing it and helping with all of these damaged people in our church. So that's really how a passion of my heart got started, and it is a passion. The Lord took me out of a very comfortable niche that was very natural to my abilities, where I could have stayed the rest of my life in the ministry of the church, and He put me in a very intensely relational kind of ministry that doesn't come naturally for me. I would rather go off in a corner and read a book than just constantly associate with people. And I, thankfully, in those days, back in the 70s, the emphasis was on relationships. Less structure, the younger people were protesting the establishment. They just basically wanted you to know, they wanted to know that you love them and that you were going to hang out with them and just have dialogue. Dialogue was the big word back then. Just be willing to dialogue and dialogue about any number of things. So that was on my side, because I didn't really know what to do. But through the years, I got a clearer picture of what is involved in discipleship and the balance between academic and relational, that they both have to be there. You can't be tipped to either side. You have to strive for that balance. And that doesn't mean that in every session with women you'll find that balance, but the overall goal would be to do that. And when women get together and want you to disciple them, often they will start with something like, I'm having a terrible time with my 2-year-old. Can we talk about child discipline? Or, what is this thing about submission to our husbands? How come that's taught like it is? Can we start there? Because I'm really having trouble with that. And immediately you can get yanked to one side. And I don't want to start any discipleship group on those topics because I don't think they're the essentials. So I learned what the essentials were. And I would say that with the knowledge, and of course being a disciple, being a learner, there has to be knowledge, there has to be input. So starting with the 7 cardinal doctrines of the Christian faith, the existence of God, and that's where I begin every one of my groups, knowing God, and knowing what women's definitions are of God, because we think we have the privilege today of defining God the way we want Him to be. And knowing the transcendent God, who is also eminent and personal, the infinite personal God, and spending time there. And I have found that once people get a better view of God, I don't think we ever come into a full comprehension of who God is, because he really is incomprehensible, a lot of the other issues start taking care of themselves as people really stand in awe of who God is. So I want to start there and then immediately go into what it means to be human. I think the two of those are just like that. In Genesis 1 through 3, that passage has become paramount in my own life and in teaching others. Made in the image of God, the creation order, which teaches us about the Trinity, and knowing the Trinity and the form and diversity and the unity and diversity and the form and function and the beauty of community, all of that comes from the Trinity. And to have women just be in awe of who God is, that we serve and love a God who is three distinct persons. And then how that affects our humanity and the beauty of humanity. Knowing that we will always be human. We will never all of a sudden by osmosis transfer into the divine. We will always have human nature, even in eternity. And that we can enjoy our humanness, that we can relax in it, and because that's how God made us. So starting there, and then going into the person of the only begotten Son of the Father, and knowing those creeds like the Nicene Creed and the Chalcedonian Creed, and letting the depth of that work, which people labored over, they're so precise in their language, that we would understand this marvelous God, and especially the only begotten of the Father, and the uniqueness of Jesus Christ being dual nature, the only human like that ever lived on earth, and falling in love with the person of Christ before we get to his work, what he's done for us. So that's sort of where I begin, and understanding the virgin conception and birth, understanding the blood atonement, a justification by faith, and the resurrection and judgment to come. Those are what I would say are the cardinal doctrines. And I want women not only to grasp the depth of that, but be able to teach it. That they can turn around and teach it. And I often say, you know, if you're having lunch somewhere with a friend who is not a believer, and they ask you why you're a Christian and just what you believe, explain the content of your faith. That it's not just, well, you know, Jesus is just a wonderful friend, and, you know, he's just really met my needs. And speaking of him on the basis of felt needs, but giving content and saying, this is what I believe, and these are actually things that I think I would die for, because they are convictions of mine. So seeing women through the years come to grasp the rich content of the faith has been so rewarding. But this is all done in a very comfortable relational setting. All of my groups have met in my home. I think maybe that's easier for women than men. If I have a morning group, and my groups go for 2 years, and if I have a morning group, I always serve them breakfast. Right now I have an evening group. They're all professional women, and some come directly from work, and we meet at 6 o'clock Monday night, and I serve them dinner. And because I believe so much in the eating together, and we don't allow that to take up the whole evening, but it gives me an opportunity to serve them, to make them feel important. It's time of laughter, of just sharing what happened that week. And all of that is done in a spontaneous nature during mealtime. So I guess I'm pretty heavy on theology. in bibliology because I see it providing a very firm foundation for their feet to be planted on. And then as we get into more practical areas like the home, the culture, how do we relate to the culture, even our gifts and calling, that's all built on those opening months of establishing a firm doctrinal foundation. So maintaining that balance is what I have learned in the decades that I have discipled. And I guess along with that, a passion is to truly equip the saints. Like Paul says in Ephesians 4, that he's given these gifts to the church, he's given those offices of pastor, teacher, evangelist, and so forth to the church for the equipping of the saints to do the work of the ministry. And that is a real passion of mine. I want to be an equipper who equips other people. And it even started with us just sitting down one day many years ago and say, what does an equipped person look like? How do you know when somebody's equipped? And we just wrote down several things that would be necessary for a person to then turn around and equip others. But equipping the saints, I believe, is our task. And we can all be involved in that and in a very delightful way. The other thing that I would say in closing is that I don't think I've ever done anything as gratifying as discipleship. It's not always been easy. You will be disappointed. You'll be let down. You'll get tired. But all of that just pales with the benefits of it, because the teacher always learns it twice. And when you are teaching and when you're studying the Bible, not just for your own sake, but on behalf of others, you grow and grow and grow and grow. And even though I've developed now a curriculum that I can give to others and that I use, I vary it a lot and it changes, I want to always be fresh, to use fresh examples, not just the tried and true, so I become stagnant. But I know a lot of conferences talk about, you know, rekindling your fire, you know, transformation and all of these words. And I just want to stand up sometime at those conferences and say, you know, if you all were discipling people, we would not even have to talk about this. Because when you disciple people, you really do grow. Because you're constantly studying, you're constantly being creative, you're thinking, you're looking at resources, can I recommend this? And you're the one that benefits the most from it. So you can't beat it. And I think the Lord's plan was plan A, it's the best plan. And we should not ignore it, but we should just be obedient and do what he told us to do.